The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to the show. My name is Pete D'Alonso, and we are Behind the Lens for 1 hour. And I have to reflect on a gentleman last week that I had on, and his name was Hawk Harrelson. And Hawk is someone that comes from a whole different mindset and perspective of the times he played back in the 60s. And he had controversy, he had kind of an attitude that was a real hard edge for what baseball players were at that time, and it was pretty much of a survival mode. And I really respected individuals like that because it was do or die. They, you know, that was all they could do for that time because they had to get a part-time job, really, in the winter months after the season was over. And, you know, he had to carry that over in other areas. And to his success, he made it into the broadcast booth. And it was kind of cool just talking to Hawk. And I've talked to him for many, many years and picking his brain. But I want to talk about today's guest. And this gentleman, Mark Gubiza, he had pretty much a decision that he had to make. And that was when he was coming from the city of brotherly love, the city of Philadelphia, went to Penn Charter High School, actually Academy, which is the Interact in Philadelphia. And the man had to make a decision on if he was going to, you know, pull up his bootstraps and pitch in the major leagues. And he made the decision. And was I believe it was the second round by the Kansas City Royals. And boy, I'll tell you, the numbers this guy put up at a very young age and kind of like put his nose to the grindstone and really had to pick a lot of people's brains to make that success into Major League Baseball. That's what Mark Gubiza is. And Mark Gubiza is now a broadcaster for the Angels for there in L.A. And Mark, I have you on the line. I want to say hello to you and thank you for being on the show. And let's talk about Mark Gubiza, his background there in Philadelphia and trying to make it in the major leagues. How are you?
Hey, Pete. What's going on, man?
I wanted to get your real reflections on coming out of high school and going right into the major leagues.
Yeah, Pete, I'll tell you what, it was a difficult decision, you know, especially when you have your parents involved and you're still a young man at that point, 18 years old. You know, I had an opportunity to go to Duke University. That's where I signed my letter of intent. Went to a number of different colleges. Back then, you got your 6 visits to determine where you were going to go. I had really no idea if, you know, I was going to be a high enough draft pick to even make that decision difficult for me to either go to school or sign a professional contract. You know, playing back east, you know, especially baseball, there's not a lot of scouts that really are drooling after you because most of them are looking in California, they're looking in, you know, Florida, Texas, places where you could play, you know, 12 months a year as compared to 3 or 4 months a year in the Philadelphia area. So, you know, got drafted. I was hanging out at the schoolyard playing stickball with a bunch of my buddies, about 16, 17 of us. My dad came driving up in his car, and he had that distinctive sound. We had a station wagon. It always made this loud noise, you know, driving up, so I knew exactly when he was coming by the neighborhood we were hanging. And he says, hey, he called me junior, even though I wasn't a junior, that, you were drafted by the Royals. And, you know, basically it was a sandwich pick, compensation pick for Daryl Porter, who was a former Royals, signed with St. Louis, so they got one of those compensation draft picks. And It was funny because the Royals had just played the Phillies in the World Series in 1980, and I'm at the game with my dad, and that was the first World Series championship the Phillies had ever won. And, I had a lot of hatred going on for the Royals at that point. Next thing you know, I'm drafted by them. And, my mom wanted me to go to Duke. My dad allowed me to make my own decision. Obviously his moms want their sons and daughters to go to college and get that degree. My dad wanted the same thing, but he just felt at that point, let me make, a decision on my own. And we had a game plan. I figured I would give it 4 years in the minor leagues. If it didn't work out, I would go back to school. Certainly wasn't going to have that opportunity to go back to Duke. And that's a missed opportunity, which even to this day, I wonder how fun that would have been and how prestigious it would have been to be able to get a degree from Duke University. But I think in the end, I made the right decision by giving it a shot, and it worked out well for me.
Great. Now, there must have been a ton of distractions. I mean, you're 18 years of age, playing in the Interact, obviously, and it's just like you have all your peers, you have all your administrators, to coaches, to your parents. Your head must have been spinning like a top, like, oh my God, this couldn't actually, you have to pinch myself to have all this notoriety and to make that type of decision. I mean, who actually influenced you the most when you made that decision?
I think, I still go back to my dad allowing me to make my own decision. I mean, I was a huge sports fan, Pete, growing up in the Philadelphia area. You love all sports, from basketball, football, hockey, baseball, everything, and you had a passion for it. And from when I started playing Little League Baseball back in Philly from 8 years old, that's the only thing I ever thought of. Now, did I think it was ever going to be a possibility to be a major leaguer, trying to be Steve Carlton, trying to be Mike Schmidt, Greg Luzinski? My favorite two players, really, Bake McBride and Manny Trio, back in the Phillies back in the day, I was wondering if I could be like those guys. But, sometimes you have to need a reality check and think, okay, it's fun to think you can do that, but you better think in terms of, down the road, if you get married, you have kids, what's the best way to, provide for them and give them the best opportunity to succeed and do better than you did as a father. So it was tough. Playing in, mentioned the Interact League, there was some serious talent in that leg in all sports. It's more of a private school. My brothers, went to Central High School, a couple of them in Philly. That's actually where Bill Cosby and a number of other people went to in Philly. And my other brother went to LaSalle High School. So we all went to basically different high schools. My dad gave us all that opportunity, even though we didn't have a whole lot growing up in the Philadelphia area, but he gave us the opportunity to decide where we wanted to go to high school. And that was something I thought was extremely special for my mom and dad to give us that opportunity. So, things just started working out well. And I'll never forget this because, the day around the draft, Vince Papale, I'm sure, you remember that name, a wide receiver for the Eagles. And if you saw that movie Invincible with Mark Wahlberg, with Dick Vermeil was there, just gave a tryout for some people in Philly area to play for the team. Vince Papale, he's already done playing football and he's interviewing me, as I'm potentially getting drafted. I couldn't even talk. I couldn't even breathe by him. I'm like, wow, you're Vince Papale. I used to have your jersey and all this stuff. So it was really cool just to have that opportunity to make a decision. And not many people get that opportunity. I mean, baseball has been the love of my life and I love the sport. I respect the sport. I respect the guys that played before me. I respect the players who play now. That, it was an amazing opportunity and it was a difficult decision. And there's always, what ifs and all those things that go along with making a decision like that. But I think in my mind, I made the right decision.
Okay. Now, you made the decision. Now you're hooked on as a ball player with the Royals. You go through their minor league systems, and then you got to be influenced by certain veterans and stuff, especially when you showed up in spring training. What was your mindset you got the butterflies, you got a lot of things rocking and rolling through your system. How did you control that, and who did you confide in?
First of all, Pete, I'll tell you what, I was miserable when I first went away. Because, as most kids, when they first go away from their parents, you have to learn to be able to cook, you have to learn to be able to wash your clothes, and here I am down, I leave Philly, I'm going down to Sarasota, Florida, which was a nice area, but we're staying in where they used to have the baseball academy for the Kansas City Royals. So you're staying basically in a dorm environment with anywhere between, sometimes rooms would have four guys in a room, sometimes you would have eight. You go from be able to slightly, not a whole lot, be on your own, because you grew up in a row home back in Philly, but still it was not an easy thing to do. And you know, so you persevered. You were homesick. I wrote letters to all my buddies, my mom and dad, like seemed to be every other day. But then I made it through that and the whole homesickness feeling, and then going to my first major league camp. I'm Frank White, who was a fantastic player, great fielder, you know, 8-time Gold Glover, you know, George Brett, guys like that. They right away just kind of put you under their wing. And Paul Splitor, Dennis Leonard, Dan Quisenberry, we had a great core of veterans that weren't worried about, you know, a young player taking their job. They were worried about continuing that winning attitude and the family atmosphere in Kansas City. So those guys really made it easy to get acclimated to being a professional and learning to be professional in every sense of the word, not just, you know, winning baseball games, but respecting, you know, media members, respecting teammates, respecting clubhouse kids, all those things that I found incredibly invaluable as I progressed in my career.
Yeah, but in order for you to formulate your personality, your culture, being from Philly, I mean, we are a different breed. There's no doubt. I mean, I knew that when I came out here to San Francisco. I mean, the Philly culture is a different mindset, a different way. We may have a different different attitude towards how we look at problems. We have a different perspective, maybe, but the way we explain ourselves is kind of like people take it offensively, or they don't know where you're coming from. You know how, you know, they wake you up, they rattle your cage when you're out of line. I just wanted to ask you, how did you kind of like let your personality and everything to be respected by your peers when you were in Sarasota, Florida?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it wasn't easy, Pete, because, you know, like people like George Brett would say, oh, man, he always gave the glare if, you know, if things didn't go well in the field or a guy didn't get a hit when you're on the mound that day. And it wasn't that I didn't have their backs. That's just the way, you know, growing up, and you mentioned that environment back in Philly, it's that blue-collar mentality that nothing's given to it. You have to fight for everything you get. Now, right, that means getting one guy out per inning and then getting yourself an opportunity to win a game. All those things come into play where you just feel that you've never been given anything, and that's why it would, I think, mold you into the person that that I became. And eventually all my teammates, whether they were in the minor leagues or at the major league level, end up respecting that and understanding that. And even I think, you know, I like to think this is, especially as I became more of a leader on the team and some of the veteran guys retired or moved on, and then I became that guy, the veteran on the team, that I indeed, you know, allow them to learn this from, not necessarily from telling them what to do, but my actions, working hard every day and, you know, being at the field on the road by 1 o'clock, and, you know, some guys would be coming in at 4 o'clock, which is nothing wrong with that. That's the time you were supposed to be there, but eventually we had almost everybody there early. I see that now with Albert Pujols. You know, he's there early too. So if you're a veteran, you know, sometimes you just show by example, and I think that's the biggest thing you can learn, and that's what I certainly learned from, you know, my dad and the environment I grew up in back in Philly.
Sure. But you had a certain swagger about the attitude when you took the hill, and as opposed to the type of batters you went up against. There was one season, if I can see it here, you had 20 game, you won 20 games 1 year, and you had to have a repertoire. You had to have a certain... I caught the swagger of knowing what you need to do when you get on the hill, especially when you approach certain batters. Now, how did Mark Gubiza change that disposition and attitude in your first year, as opposed to getting into, your second and third year? What did you do changing gears to do that?
Well, I think as you progress in any profession, you get tidbits of information from everybody, and I was always a guy that, you know, I went up to the late Don Drysdale and talked to him for one time for 2 hours in our clubhouse and learned so much from him. Same thing with Tom Seaver, Jim Palmer, you know, Dennis Leonard was on our team there for a while. Even when he was hurt, I was always picking his brain to the point where he would see me walking at him. He would almost try to run away from me. That, you know, I think it's a disservice to your job to not try to get better by getting as much information as possible, especially from guys that have done it and been successful. From my first year on, I was very inconsistent in the strike zone. I was trying to overthrow every pitch, and you know, I had one pitching coach would come out to the mound and say, "What are you doing? Why are you walking people?" And I would say, "I'm not trying to." And he starts screaming back. I scream back at him. And then it was counterproductive for me. And then another pitching coach came along, a guy named Frank Funk, and I still to this day even use the same information when I talk to the high school kids I work with out here in Los Angeles. The old saying, he says, "Do me a favor." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "You know, typical in my fashion, what do you mean? What do you want me to do?" And I'm like, I already, you know, got my shield up thinking I'm not going to listen to this guy. And he tells me, "Try easy." And I look at him like, "Are you serious?" And he looks at me again, "Yeah, try easy." And so I'm like, "All right." I said, "Okay, well, what do you mean by that?" You know, my typical attitude that I had at that point.
I love it. Go ahead.
"Don't try to throw the ball 300 miles an hour. Try to throw the ball consistently where you want to throw it at a much easier pace. Don't rear back and throw as hard as you can every single pitch and just see what happens." I'm like, I can't do that. It's not in my genes to do that. And he goes, "All right, try it." So he was persistent enough that I think that's part of the reason why I accepted it, because he was persistent. He didn't just throw it out there and just walk away. He was persistent in telling me to give it a shot. So he did this in spring training in 88. That was the year I ended up winning 20 games. And before long, yes, I still was very competitive in my mindset, but I also knew that to be a successful pitcher, you have to pitch that seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. You can't rely on your bullpen to give you, you know, 12 outs of support every day, every game out there, 9 outs. Be the guy that's shaking your catcher's hand at the end of the ball game. And the best way to do that is to not overthrow every single pitch. Hit your spots, get ahead of count, get some quick outs, and then see what happens. And you know, I had success doing that. This change in speeds on my fastball. And you know, instead of trying to throw 95, I would try to throw 90 with some sink action. And before long, I was getting ground ball after ground ball and quick outs. And I remember a game in Minnesota that year, I think I might have completed the game with 84, 86 pitches. So I wasn't sweating my head off. I wasn't dying. I wasn't throwing 160 pitches like I would do in my previous seasons. And I bit into that. And I'll tell you what, it was probably the best information I ever got. And you know, I was resistant initially, but you know, again, I was always had it in my mind that I was always willing to give anything a shot that I thought was useful information. I think that was the best information I ever got.
That's very interesting to see how you learn to change, and you couldn't continue to have that. It's not a question of a chip on your shoulder. You've learned to accept other people's constructive criticism, and to me, that's very noble. And you could pass that on to the high school kids that you're coaching right now there in LA, that this is what it takes to get success. And this is something that you got to remember, and you have to kind of, I always say, etch it into your brain. And you know for a fact that this is what you're going to have to do now, because if you want to stay in this game, you got to learn to have that. There's certain mental disciplines. And, you know, it's either, I swear to God, I look at it the same way in television, in our business right now. It's either you have it or you don't. It really comes down to that, Mark. And I see people that are trying to come in as camera operators and stuff, and it's kind of like, yeah, you understand the fundamentals, but it's the things that they really, really think is very important. You know, that you're not getting it. And that was one thing that I wanted to stress when you're kind of like relating a lot of the things that you did as a major league ball player. But anyway, hey, Mark, we got to take a break. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. I'm talking to Mark Gubaza, broadcaster now for the Angels there in Los Angeles. We'll be right back right after this station break.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
The job of a professional athlete is never complete. In Life After the Game, host Lamar Campbell will take an inside look at how athletes are making the transition from the professional athletics world to the professional business world. You'll understand the goals, motivations, and personalities that drive these players off the field and in their post-professional career. Tune in to Life After the Game with Lamar Campbell every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
I don't care where they put him. This one is out of here.
From high school to the pros, we cover everything.
Cover everything.
Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Mark Gubiza, and I talked to him about some of the individuals that he worked with, and it's kind of like you either made the adjustments or you don't, and there's players today that have to learn to make the adjustments. And Mark, I mean, go ahead. I mean, you tell me what your reflections are on certain individuals that if they don't make the adjustments, adios, they're a ghost, right?
Yeah, I mean, I look at, you know, Pete, right now, a guy like Justin Verlander, who I respect as a competitor as much as anybody. I think he could have played in any era. And you ask any former player, they'll say the same thing about Verlander. And he goes out and just dominates games and doesn't want to come out of a game. He'll throw 150, 160 pitches during the course of the game. And if the manager even takes a step out of the dugout, he's willing to throw him back in the dugout and say, it's my job to finish off this game. And, you know, but I think at this point of his career, he's going to have to make some adjustments. And I've seen it firsthand with Jerry Weaver, who, when you look, you know, you can look on Fangraphs and all these other tools to look at a guy's velocity on his fastball. It is down considerably from when he first came up to the major leagues, but he's figured out how to win. And he's an incredibly competitive guy like Verlander. He doesn't throw hard anymore, but he'll hit his spots. He'll change speeds well. He'll go upstairs with a fastball, go downstairs with a fastball. He'll get to the point where he's trying to get quick outs, and I think that's the adjustment that somebody like a Justin Verlander will have to do. And he's a proud competitor, and he's still, to this point, you can tell that he's not willing to bite into that at this point of his career. He's still pretty young, but he's thrown a lot of pitches and a lot of innings, a lot of postseason innings, almost similar to what you see with Kobe Bryant in basketball. You know, their age is still pretty good, but when you've been putting some wear and tear in your body at the highest level in the most difficult games consistently throughout your career, hey, you're going to age a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Maybe not in your mind. You still think you can go out and do the things you did when you were in your early 20s, but that's not the case. So I think once he makes the adjustment, I think he will. He's a smart enough guy because he loves to compete, that he's going to have to think in terms of pitching to contact, get quick outs, maybe change speeds off his fastball to allow his curveball and his slider and changeup be that much more effective at certain points of the game. And like I said, he's one of my favorite players, you know, that's done a lot for a long period of time. Obviously, one of my favorite guys right now is Madison Bumgarner. That guy is Dallas. I love that guy, the way he competes. Clayton Kershaw, as far as on the pitching side. Those guys that compete and want the baseball in the ninth inning are guys I respect a ton.
Yeah. And it's kind of something that you kind of blend in with your personality when you see these individuals. It's kind of like you respect them so much that you wish you had some of those traits that could blend into your repertoire, that they have that confidence of knowing how to come into the ninth inning, like you said, and throw that, what is it, a cutter now or the backdoor slider? I mean, it's all these terms that the viewer at home don't really know what you're talking about. And how do you explain that in the broadcast booth?
Yeah, that's never easy because, you know, I've worked with a couple of producers that have been around for a long period of time, and I love this stuff when they get in my ear, like when I say, well, it's backdoor cutter. And he'll get in my ear, one of my producers, go, okay, tell me as a dumb fan, not knowing exactly what a backdoor cutter is, explain that on air. So inevitably, after I say backdoor cutter, this is what I'll say. With a left-handed batter, what he'll try to do is throw, you know, have the batter think it's a fastball off the outside corner. It's a ball, but with the cut action on the fastball, you can bring it around and get the outside corner. You'll freeze the hitter because he's determined to think that's outside the strike zone, but you also have a catcher working with you, framing that pitch in the outside corner. He's already told the umpire during the course of the game, well, he throws his pitch pretty consistently, so that's why you're going to get that call during the course of the game. So I think sometimes you get caught up in the game as an announcer, color announcer especially, that you assume everyone knows what you're talking about when you say that those things. But it's good to have a producer to say, hey, as a fan, explain that a little bit more in depth. You might, you know, offend the smart fan at times because you're explaining that, but you're also allowing the fan, it's just a casual fan, to pick up a terminology now that allows them to be more in touch with the game as they start watching more and more games.
Yeah. Well, it's true because the average fan, you know, it's kind of like you look at a curve and you look at a slider and they can't make the determination. I don't know if it's what the slider is compared to what the curve is, and they're going in at the same speeds, and it's just like, explain that to me. And it's just like there's a lot of interpretations that goes into the sport that you think – it's not a question you're insulting the viewer's intelligence. It's just like you're saying, you being around the game for as long as you have, it's a free flow. You knew at the time – when you were pitching, what you needed to do, and that type of command that was demanded by you to make the pitches that you wanted to deliver. Now it's come down to it's more so specialized, and the speed is incredibly high. The mouse MPH, I mean, it's getting to a point where it's so specialized that you're starting to see it a lot different than the time you were playing over 30 years ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's more difficult now, Pete, because the fact is you can't just say, well, it's a curveball or a two-seam fastball, four-seam fastball without able to explain that because you have high-definition TV right now where you can see the rotation. You have, you know, slow-mo. You have Fox Vision. All these things you have now as a tool to explain stuff to the viewer that you better have an idea what you're talking about. When you see the rotation, the difference between a four-seam fastball and a two-seam fastball, there's a big difference. Now, it doesn't seem like a whole lot before in the past when guys, hey, he's got a good sinking fastball, a good two-seamer. Well, you just go with it as a fan, and you're fine. But now, when you can see the actual rotation, the baseball, the difference between, you know, a sinking fastball and a straight four-seam fastball, there's a significant difference. Or the same thing, the rotation of the seams on a slider is compared to a curveball. You can see the dot of the seams on a good slider as compared to a curveball or even a knuckleball. There's absolutely no rotation at all in the seams of the baseball. So you better be in tune with the fact that whatever instrument you have now to explain that you have a pretty good idea, because fans right now are pretty smart, and they have so many different avenues to go there and figure out things, whether it's on, you know, social media, on the internet, whatever it is, or there's so many games now on TV, so many different broadcasts. Everyone's trying to be better than the other network as far as those little tools you have that to explain the game. You know, it's great when you see, you know, when a batter squares up a baseball as compared to hitting off the end of the bat. Before, you know, it's off the end of the bat. Well, we go, okay, it's off the end of the bat. But now that you can explain that and show that with a video of a bat vibrating is when you hit off the end of the bat, or if it's on the handle as compared to hitting it right on the barrel of the bat where there's absolutely no vibration in the bat at all when you square it up, or if you hit underneath the baseball, on top of the baseball, why the ball goes down the ground, why the ball goes flying through the air, when the ball is completely squared up, goes out of the ballpark. All those things you have now as an instrument to not only entertain, but to teach a viewer. Even the casual viewer will be able to figure out exactly what you're trying to explain if you do it in a fun way. You know, sometimes we all get caught up into terminology and all this, you know, analytical stuff we have now in baseball, which some is good, some is tedious to try to explain. Sometimes it goes over the head of some viewers. Some viewers love it. So you just got to try to find that balance to be able to explain things best.
Cool. Well, you know, that's what, from my previous shows, I've always talked to the guest about, especially the color analysts. I talked to Dwayne and Mike about this, and it kind of is provoking. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong. You got the time to explain a storyline And I know if I gave Mark Gubazaw enough enough line to kind of take in for what he wants to give an explanation, especially a pitcher in a game situation, and I'm going to take that away from you, Mark, because we got promos to talk, or you got tweets to talk about, and we gotta go to certain promos that's taken away from your. It's really a disservice to you because you got something to offer right now, because you're living it right now at the Coliseum, talking about what the situation is going on right now between the A's and the Angels, and this there's some heat going on right now, Daddy-O, and you're trying to explain it, but you can't explain it because you got to do a promo. Victor's got to do a promo, or you got to do a tweet, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Mark, I tell you what, Pete, it makes it difficult, but you understand. You know, initially it was difficult, but then you understand, okay, somebody has to pay the bills to...
I understand all that, yeah. Mark. I understand all that. The thing that provokes me is that you're on a roll, Daddy-O. I do not want to interrupt Mark Gubazaw's analysis because he's got something to say. Mark, you have something to say, and it's noteworthy. Why do I have to take that away from you, Mark?
Yeah, well, the thing is... part of it, Pete, as a group with the Angels, we're pretty good. After every single game, especially on the road, the whole crew go out and get something to eat, have a pop after the game, and talk. And
right.
Sometimes we're just having fun, but throughout the course of our conversations, when we're all together, we built this camaraderie where if I'm in a situation where I know I have something important to tell, and even though my producer is in his mind thinking, boy, I got to get this promo out or I got to get this tweet out, that he knows that we'll get it done. And it'll may even get forced in at some point. But he's always going to allow me to explain this important part of the game. Like I said, these guys, my two producers, Jeff Kibler and Jay Cutlow, have been doing baseball games for a long, long time.
Right.
And they're really in tune with knowing – when that, you know, the old saying, we always have these meetings, the moment. And it could be a number of moments during the course of the game may be the difference between win and lose. And it's difficult to really keep that going during a 162-game schedule. Now, in football, you got 16 games. You lose a couple games, you're not making the postseason. 162 games, especially because every game's on TV at all different venues, that I still think there's a moment, very least a couple moments during the course of the game, determine if you win or lose. And that's your job as a color analyst to keep that viewer in tune, learn, but keep them entertained and keep them watching the game, because that moment, there could be a play. Like if you're watching that football game the other night with the Giants and that catch,
yeah.
I mean, that was insane. Same thing I watch with Mike Trout every game.
Yeah.
He does something that, somebody who's watching a game may have never seen anybody that good. I mean, the comparison between him and Mickey Mantle, the athleticism, the skill, the tenacity, they're remarkable players, both of them. Mickey was unbelievable. Trout's the same way. Pujols, the same thing. Where if you give the viewer an opportunity to get kind of caught up in, it's like watching a real good movie, getting caught up in something special is going to happen. I'm not stopping, even if it means somebody's going to be mad for not getting his promotion in at that point. The producers have our backs that we'll get it done. At some point during the game, they're going to allow us to get that moment and give it out to the fans, whether they're a fan of the Angels or a fan of, say, Oakland we're playing. It could be Donaldson's coming up and Houston Street's facing him. He's got a 3-2 count. And then, lo and behold, you forgot to get a read-in at some point. Well, you know what? We'll take the chance of taking the heat from somebody. We're going to really build this one and have some fun with Donaldson versus Houston Street and see what happens in the course of the game.
Right. Well, it's something that I want to get your feelings on because a lot of times they throw their hands up because we got to remember who's paying the bills. And I understand all that the money issue and the fight, but I look at the quality of the show itself. And I see, I've been covering, just sports television for so long. It's getting to a point, I don't want to insult the viewer. And You felt the same way when you were watching the Birds play down in Glendale when they play the Cardinals. It's kind of like there's all these TV timeouts, and it's just like, you know, it's too much. It's too much. And I just want to enjoy the game. And it's just like I just wish that, you know what I'm saying, that nice mix where I know I could take a breath and, you know, get up and go to the refrigerator and get a beer and then come back and watch the game. You know, I understand that, but it's the constant during the game itself. You know, Mark, where I'm coming from? It's
yeah,
like,
I'll tell you, Pia, you know.
Mark, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I love all sports. I love football games. I love the NFL Packers, so I don't miss any games. I'm zipping back and forth all over the place.
Right.
But when I went to that game, you mentioned that when the Eagles were in Arizona, you sit there, I mean, it's like, it got to the point where I'm looking at, you know, my wife and my kids there, and we're like, wow, this game, you know, they talk about the length of a baseball game. I mean, it's a time sport, football. It's a 15-minute quarters, four of them. That's an hour. If I'm doing my math right, I think I'm pretty good at math. And we're talking a three-and-a-half-hour game? I mean, really? There's a timeout every second. There's a penalty every half a second.
Oh, God.
And I understand, especially football players, I mean, it's momentum. It's all about momentum during the course of the game. So often when you're doing well, boom, there's a timeout. There's something going on. Slow down the flow that sometimes you just it keeps from, you know, allowing that sport to be as good as it could be. And even though everyone loves football,
right,
that there could be a lot better. Just like in any sport. I mean, you see it in basketball, another time sport. That's a 48-minute game. They're close to 3 hours now, too.
Right.
Now, there's replay, instant replay, and all that jazz, and that's another story to go along with that. But everything is, I mean, I know people like long games anyhow because that sells a lot of advertisement. I understand that part of it. But as a fan, you want to see the best plays happening, and the best way that's going to happen is if, you know, there's not that constant stopping of the game and the flow of the game. And I think in baseball right now, I like what they were doing in the Arizona Fall League, trying to find a way to speed up the game, less visits to the mound, quicker times as a time, you know, clock on how long in between pitches. Batters can't walk around out of the batter's box. That's important because in this day and age, especially with the younger generation, they like quickness. They like things going fast. And if the sports continue to slow down like we're seeing, that maybe we start losing those viewers, and that's something nobody wants to see happen.
But if you're an executive producer, you would know that. You could see that. You can feel that. You know what your costs are. You know what your overhead. You know the passion and the creativity that's going on into the production of the show. And I feel that I don't want to take that viewership away from me. I don't want to insult them. I don't want to have something where I'm giving you something right now that I know it can wait. You know, like you're at the dinner table, and a person's talking, like Mark Gubazov's talking, and I'm going to interrupt you, Mark, but everybody wants to listen to what Mark Gubazov is talking about. That's rude, Mark.
Yeah.
That's rude.
The beauty of sports is you don't have retakes. Everything's spontaneous, and it's enthusiasm, it's energy. That's what makes sports. That's why everyone loves sports. No, there's so many different sports you can like. You can throw in their soccer, you can throw in their tennis, you can throw in their golf. All
right.
These sports, but it's because there's no second takes. It's either you do it or you don't do it.
Right.
When you're doing a movie, it could be 30 takes. And not to take anything away from them because it's an incredible craft they do. It's incredible art. But that's why people, even actors, love sports because you just don't know what's going to happen. But you got to keep that flow of each sport going. Otherwise, it just doesn't feel like you have that same energy where you're sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for something, because then the minute you're sitting on the edge of your seat, there's a break, and you sit back in your seat, and then you have a conversation with whoever you're next to, and then, boom, you might have missed what happened again.
Exactly.
So you just want to keep that flow going.
And that's what's going to happen right now. I got to take a break, so.
See, you did it to me right there. Right there, no doubt.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Behind the Lens with Pete DeLonzo. We got to take a break, but we'll be right back right after this.
Your internet
flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. Formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams, Kwame's got the experience. So he's prepared to talk sports with you every week on Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time. Get ready for an unpredictable, fun, and sometimes sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
Check your feelings at the door and enter the man cave. Don't let the name fool you, because we're here for anybody that wants to talk and listen in. Hosts J.D. Harris and Ray Austin are here to lead the forum from the fans, former players, owners, execs, and coaches. While inside the man cave, you do whatever you like. We won't judge. We'll even go beyond sports to talk technology, current events, and entertainment. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
They need to bench his ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
Mark Gubazon, we're in our third segment here, and God, it's just we're touching on things that need to be brought up, and Mark knows it needs to be brought up, and Major League Baseball knows it needs to be brought up, and you know, Mark goes to the big time meetings there in Arizona or in Florida, and they talk about the broadcast, and Mark, explain to me, as opposed to explaining to the listeners, about your perspective on how the broadcasts are done and what needs to, you think in your perspective, what needs to be changed?
I think when it goes down to, we're all, you know, especially kids growing up, you know, like I mentioned back at Philly playing stickball, you know, the same area back and listen to Harry Callis, where, you know, they're painting the picture and they're allowing you to actually feel like you're at the ballpark when you're listening to the game on the radio or watching it on TV. Because there's the flow and the explanation of what's going on, not stopping and saying something's brought to you by this or something's brought to you by that, as this pitch is being thrown. And, you know, it's difficult, especially for play-by-play guys right now, because they're always stopping in the middle of, you know, of everything they say is because something's brought to you by this or that. And the inability is to really paint that masterpiece like the guys in the past have been able to do. It's difficult. And then you go to these meetings and, you know, and they explain things. So you have like, you know, 45, 60 reads during the course of the game that you have to get in, and you're going to get them in. Otherwise, you're not doing the game anymore. So you're going to get them in. And there's ways you can do it now where you don't. But again, it's an art where you have to be together as a group. I think that's what's so much fun with our guys, from the guys in the truck, from our ADs to, you know, to our camera guys, to our sound guys, everybody, we're always together. So we have a pretty good flow. So we know how to get things in when we have to, when to give it a little bit of breathing room to explain the game and then get back to what we have to get done business-wise. But, you know, other times you could see it's a difficult task for other guys to do that because you're constantly jamming stuff in there that it makes it difficult. And I think eventually everyone will figure it out because as fans either, you know, complain about or say some things about, you know, let's get back to, you know, the point where, you know, we understand the business part of it, but also we want our guys that are explaining our games to have that leeway to explain the game first and then get the business stuff done at a different point.
Well, yeah, that's something where you're digressing. You talk about what was like at the vet and watching the Fightins play. It's like
there's that break where you talk to your dad or you talk to your buds, and you know, you're pounding down a beer and you're watching the fightings playing there, and it's like, this is cool because we could talk. But you can't do that today because the PA system is so jammed. It's too loud. You know, I lost my hearing. I mean, it's one thing, but it leads me to really reflect on enough's enough. You know, it's kind of like you come home, Mark, and it's like, I just want to hear silence. You know, I swear to God, Mark, it's just like, please, for one moment, I just want to have that Zen feeling in the backyard. I'm gonna fold my knees, put my hands together into my chest, and hum. You know, because I swear to God, Mark, I feel like at times like I'm losing my mind because it's too much, Mark. The noise level at the ballpark, especially the broadcast we're doing, it's like you're pounding 10 pounds of feces in a 5-pound bag. I really feel that way, Mark. It gets to a point in my life where we got to find that semblance, discretion. We got to pull the reins back, and we got to reflect on, I don't want to insult this game. I want the viewer to understand or the listener to understand, and I want the people that are there, the patrons at the game, I want them just to relax and have a good time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I think the big thing it comes down to is there's got to be some balance where there's a core group of fans that love the loud music, and there's a core group of fans that love just the purity of games itself, whether it's whatever sport you're watching. So you look for that balance. I think as an organization, that's what you have people working for you. What is our balance? Do we need more of this? Do we need more of that?
I don't know anymore, Mark. I really don't. I think I remember when Whitey and Harry Callis, it would be just all you hear is Nat sound. You know, the kids, you know, the Cub Scouts to the guys cracking peanuts. And it's just like, it's that downtime that you just play it out. Jack Buck was the same way. He played it out. Just there's crack of the bat, the shot, the left field. Kirby Puckett hits that home run
tomorrow, and all those great ones like Vince Scully, the same thing that you know, the home run by Gibson.
Yeah,
you know, he just did ball hit, explain where it's going, and lay out, and
right.
let the sounds of the stadium, you know, filter into the TV broadcast. That's purity,
right?
But again, that's difficult to do nowadays. But yes, everyone would love to be able to do that, and I think some broadcasts do it more so than others, and you know, some aren't allowed to do it more than others. So I mean, there's, like I said, it's all, for me, it's all about balance. It's like when I explained earlier in the show about when my pitcher coach says try easy. Well, you know, initially I there's no way I'm even considering that, but then all of a sudden, as he explained it better and was vehement about the fact is it's not a bad thing, that then you find the balance. So I think that's the thing where everyone's striving for, you know, in this part of the game right now, where you're trying to entertain, you know, a very difficult, you know, group. You have young people, you have middle-aged people, you have the older fan watching. So they've all had their ways and their set ways in which they've watched the game, who they listen to and who they learn from. But then, you know, then you have the younger viewer that's, you know, that loves the loud music. And you know, I have kids, and I love my loud music too. That's why I can't hear any. I mean, too many Black Sabbath concerts and stuff back in the Spectrum in Philly. I can't hear either anymore. I think as any human being, you evolve and you have balance with both every generation. I think that's the best way, and you know, and that's why I try to. You know, I'm not a guy that's ever. I don't go out of my way to be critical of a player or a game. I know I get criticized for that at times for being that way, but if I want somebody to watch the game, why would I sit there and say, this player stinks, this guy can't do this, this team is horrible? If you have so many other options in life, why would you watch our broadcast if I'm saying this team stinks?
All right,
well,
that's your perspective.
I'm going to explain.
You're different than what Hawk is back in his prime days, too. I mean, if he was critical on a player, he was critical on a player. He was critical on a manager, he would do that the same way. But your perspective, I respect that, because you're telling it. Why should I go after the attack the person's person? You know, his athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way you can make your point of like, well, why did he throw that pitch? Well, you don't say, well, this guy stinks. Why did he throw that pitch? Well, this pitch, in my opinion, wasn't the proper pitch to throw at this point. This pitch would have been better off. Well, that, you're saying the same thing, but you're not alienating, you know, fan thinking, well, I'm not wasting my time. This guy on the mound can't do anything, or this guy at the plate, he can't hit, and this team isn't going to win games. Well, then why are you wasting your time? So I'm going to explain what this team needs to do to be better, what this hitter needs to do to give himself the best chance possible of putting the ball in play, making contact, or someone making play in the field. I thought this World Series was excellent this past, even the postseason in general, because finally we're looking, instead of talking about, you know, wow, we see a lot of pitches at the plate where these guys are real patient, and that stuff's fine if you want to get into that. But the fact is, it was a pure game. Guys diving, Lorenzo Cain making great plays in the field. You know, pitchers making pitches. That bullpen for Kansas City was unbelievable, the back end. Bumgarner pitching on two-day rest and never thinking in terms of coming out of the game. That's the purity of the game of baseball, where I think it needs to be explained even more so, because those are what people want to watch. They don't want to necessarily see a guy, oh, he sees a lot of pitches at the plate right now. He's seen his fifth and sixth pitch. He's worked himself into a good fastball count. Well, if you do and you don't get a hit with that fastball count you're in, what purpose did it serve? I want to see some action. I want to see some plays in the field. I want to see some good swings. I want to see some quality pitches. And I want to see guys competing and enjoying themselves competing. And that's the bottom line in sports, enjoying yourself competing.
But I tell you, there's one individual that you can reflect on, and that had to be Bo Jackson.
Yeah, love that guy. I mean, you know,
wow.
Besides what we'll get into more of his athletic talents, he was a great dude, because the fact is, if he didn't like you, he wasn't sugarcoating it. If you were a teammate, he didn't like you, didn't like the way you went about your business, he wasn't going to pretend you were a real good dude, that's for sure. So he was straightforward, a phenomenal player, loved to compete. That, you know, I went to all the Raider games during, you know, when he was playing. That was during both our off season. Instead of his hobby, my hobby was going to watch him play, his hobby. So I had fun going to Raider games on the sidelines and just watching, you know, the reaction of his teammates, and, you know, from Bob Golic to Howie Long, all those guys, you know, they look at you and I look over at them, they're like going, what is this person? He's like, he's not even a human being, what he can do. And he's not even a camp. He goes halfway through the season, and he's flying by guys. And he's running over people like Bosworth and all these great players, real good defenders that hit people hard. And I remember him telling me, he says, the team that hit him the hardest, Denver Broncos. They had some guys like Atwater and all those guys that really put a hit on you. But did it slow him down? No. And he just loved competing. What he could do on the baseball field was insane. I mean, there were times where, you know, he'd go three games without making contact. But then there's games in which he would hit a ball 500 feet, or he'd go flying through the air. Not like sometimes you'll see outfielders time their leap to make a great play. He would literally go flying through the air to make a play. He would throw a ball at the wall like we saw in Seattle with Harold Reynolds trying to score the winning run in the ninth inning, threw the ball right from the warning track at the wall in left center field all the way in the air to Bob Boone, who applies the tag. I was literally walking into the clubhouse thinking the game's over. I didn't want to see Seattle celebrating. I just gave a courtesy look back. Even Steve Farr, who was pitching, was walking off the field, gave a courtesy look back, and next to me, you know, we all looked at each other like, what just happened? And that's what the beauty of sports. You can see when you have people like Bo Jackson that do these things, or in this day and age you have Mike Trout, and you know, or you have, you know, sometimes even a guy with the swing of Bryce Harper or Matt Kemp, Yasiel Puig, so much young, incredibly athletic talent that, hey, you better not take too long before you get back to the television to watch and see what's going to happen. And Bo was that guy where no one ever left the dugout when he was hitting. Never. And it was funny because George Brett to this day always says the same thing. We never moved. Now, if you had to go to the bathroom, you were waiting. You were no way going to the bathroom when Bo was coming up, because he was you never knew where he was going, how far he was going to hit. He might swing and miss and break the bat over his helmet or break it over his leg and still be astonished that he could do that, because I remember trying to do that like a goofball that I was, and I swear I thought I broke my thigh trying to break a bat over my leg. But only, it was like I said, only Bo could do things like that, and he was a phenomenal teammate, an incredible athlete, but a stand-up guy. I mean, that's what I admire about him the most. He was a stand-up guy.
That's cool. I mean, it's so many things that you're saying, I just kind of reminisce all the things, especially when he kind of like went up against the center field wall. He just went up like he was like lateral to or horizontal to the ground. He was like maybe 4 feet off the ground when he caught the ball, and he just went up against the wall and stepped up there and came down. It was just a phenomenal athlete, and I just could, you know, reflect on that as well. Well, anyway, Mark, we're coming to our conclusion. I thank you so much for being on the show. I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. And I got a little parting prize for you that I'll be sending your way as well. So thanks for being on the show. Okay, my man?
You got it, Pete. Anytime, man. I'll tell you just one quick thing. One thing my dad always told me, and this is what I live by my whole life. He said, it takes absolutely no effort to be a good person, but it takes a lot of effort to be a bad person. That's the reason why I've always kept my attitude the way it's been. I think I owe so much to my parents, but my dad saying that was something I lived by my whole life.
Sweet. Thanks for being on the show, my man, and I look forward to seeing you 2015 here at the Coliseum.
You got it, Pete. Happy Thanksgiving,
right,
man.
All right, my man. I'll be talking to you later. Okay, you take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our show for today with Mark Gubaza. And just to let you know, next week I got teed up a gentleman that used to be a quarterback for the Raiders, the head coach for the Raiders, got a Super Bowl ring for the Raiders as a coach. His name is Tom Flores. So next week, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be talking to you then. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you then.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Lens with Pete D'Alonso. Be sure to catch the show again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. We'll have much more to talk about then.